Welcome, everybody, to the next in our very popular series of debates on topical issues in partnership with Cardiff University. I'm Auriel Miller. I'm Director of the Institute of Welsh Affairs, the IWA. And I just want to say thanks for coming on what has turned out to be the best weather that we've had lately in the evening. 21 degrees outside. We've got a really great turnout, though I'm sure we'll have a few people trickling in within the first few minutes of this evening. And I'm really pleased in particular that it's for this particular debate that, to have such a good turnout, because it's a crucial issue and it needs to get the attention that it deserves. Mobiles on silent, please, but the hashtag, which is on your speaker biogs sheet, is hashtag IWA debate. All our debates are on the same hashtag, so please get tweeting. Let's get lots of people involved and see how far we can reach. As ever, we've got a really great lineup for a really timely discussion. We'll be sending the event note from tonight's conversation to the Communities Equality and Local Government Committee to consider as part of their evidence gathering. So please don't hold back, either panellists on either side of the argument, but also questions as well. As the IWA, we always want to start from the point of view of informing people of the evidence that we have on any particular issue. So I'm going to hand over, to get the ball rolling, to Michael Trickey, Director of the Wales Public Services 2025 programme, to give us some facts on which to base our discussion. And then I will carry on after that. Michael, over to you.
Thanks, Auriel, and good evening, everybody. And yes, well done for turning up on such a lovely evening. Providing a helicopter view of Welsh Government action to tackle poverty in 10 minutes is kind of a daunting challenge. So what you're going to get from me is more kind of tabloid headlines than sophisticated forensic analysis. But the fun in putting this together the last couple of days has been to realise there is actually a good job of work to be done here when someone has the time to do it. JRF published an anti-poverty strategy, Joseph Rowntree Foundation published an anti-poverty strategy for the UK last autumn, which sought to provide a way forward for governments across the four nations of the UK for action to reduce poverty. I haven't got time today to go into the debate about the technical debate about how you measure poverty or clarifying terminology. Just to note that there are different concepts associated with the discussion around poverty, deprivation, social exclusion, regeneration, social justice, equality, all of which are highly relevant, but all means slightly different things. And one of the issues about the debate about poverty is getting clarity about what exactly it is we're talking about. So for the moment, we're going to talk about JRF's view is poverty as the gap between people's resources and their ability to meet their most basic needs. Poverty is a complex phenomenon, and people in poverty have very different relationships to poverty. Some are in for the long term, some near destitution. Others are moving in and out of poverty on the margin. So poverty is one term, but embracing really quite a huge range of experience and circumstances. JRF talk about five principal causes of poverty, which shouldn't be a surprise to anyone here, I don't think. Low wages, insecure jobs, unemployment, lack of skills, family circumstances, which can be anything from health to family breakup, ineffective tax and benefit systems. And the thing that often got missed out in the early discussions about poverty, which was high costs faced by people in poverty, the poverty premium in relation to housing, utilities, transport costs, and so on. Now, some of these are substantially outside of devolved influence. So the issue for Wales has been to be clear about the things it can influence and how. So where are we on poverty at the moment? This is the shows the trend over the last 20 or so years. The top line refers to child poverty, the middle line to poverty among working adults in Wales, and the bottom line, pensioners. So three things to note. One is that in terms of working adults, the numbers in poverty have not really changed very much over the last 20 years. We're roughly talking about the same level of population as we were 20 years ago. The big, much trumpeted change has been in terms of pensioners. The pensioner poverty, as you can see, that's the red line, went through quite a big shift down, and partly in response to pensioner credit, obviously since then the triple lock and the whole discussion about state pensions. In Wales, however, there's a slightly a slight sting in the tail on pensioner poverty, because the latest data suggests it might be going back up again, which is not the pattern across the rest of the UK. Child poverty is substantially less than it was in the early 1990s, but the pattern here is up and down all the time. And you can see that the current trend, that's the very top line, is going pointing upwards again. There's clearly an issue. In terms of the makeup of what sort of households we're talking about, the other big story across the UK has been the rise of the numbers of people in poverty who are in working households. And again, this is a UK pattern. And what we've tried to do here, it's not very clear on the graph, but basically the top bar, the light colour bar, is the percent, the numbers living in workless households in Wales, and the two lower bars are the numbers in working households. And you can see that in 5 or 10 years ago, it was roughly even. The numbers in poverty in workless households was roughly equivalent to the number in working households. That ratio has gradually shifted away from workless households, more and more people in work, in poverty. And that's to do with the things that people are very familiar with, short hours, short contracts, and so on. If we look forward, the IFS have been looking at the impact of the last round of benefit, tax benefit reforms, and you get a picture where, at the moment, of a significant increase in child poverty projected over the next 4 years. There are two options, with reforms and without reforms, and there is a difference. This is substantially being driven by the change in benefits policy announced over the last two budgets. But even without those benefits changes, there would still be an issue. And the current debate about the level of earnings in relation to inflation and so on simply underlines all that. So that's for children, and the line below is looking at all households, and again, a slightly upward trend. In other words, we're not in the best possible place in terms of tackling poverty. Tackling poverty has been a part of the political discourse ever since the Assembly was established. And I just wanted to divide the action on poverty into three phases. And I don't think any of this would necessarily academically stack up, but it just might be a helpful way of looking at what's happened. The first phase, I'm calling building a portfolio, was over the first 10 years. And this was an era of multiple initiatives and programs from the Welsh Government, which generated a huge raft of local projects, a sort of thousand flowers blooming, spreading often limited resources fairly thinly in relation to some really quite complex issues. The programs were often based on a positive view about the way effectiveness of partnerships, local partnerships, in coming together, developing and driving change. But for this era, there was a kind of limited amount of national coordination or direction, and sometimes not an awful lot in terms of clarity about what these programs should be delivering in relation to poverty. So the classic examples were the Community's First program, which kicked off in the early in 2001, a 10-year program initially about ground-up action through partnership, later rebadged as a flagship poverty program. And there were the various initiatives on regeneration, fuel poverty, and so on. A more strategic response began to emerge with the development of the first child poverty strategy around 2006. This, in a sense, was a kind of response to New Labour's commitment to eradicating child poverty in the UK, which was supported by Gordon Brown's tax credit systems and a number of other major initiatives such as Sure Start. So in a sense, the child poverty strategy was kind of Wales's response to that. And its commitment then was to halve child poverty by 2010 and eradicate child poverty by 2020. And of course, we know that that's some way off what actually happened. The major program under that strategy was Flying Start, which was strongly based on international evidence about the importance of early years in terms of action to improve life chances of children in the most deprived areas. And initially, it operated through a fairly loose national network with a very strong emphasis on local partnership rather than deliverables, which came, and if you look at the early evaluations of Flying Start, they will reflect the challenge that evaluators found in identifying exactly what the programme was trying to achieve and exactly how it was supposed to be doing it. Alongside of Flying Start, there are other very important initiatives of school breakfasts, of course, which featured excitingly in the last election campaign, and, of course, a whole raft of very important EU-funded programmes under the under the early phases of the regeneration of the Regional Development Fund. So the first phase was all about lots of ideas, activity and energy, but subsequent evaluations often found it difficult to identify clear results and outcomes. The second phase, and some of you in the audience I know were closely involved with this, saw a very shift in approach, a much more active leadership model from the Welsh Government, pulling the threads together, establishing a much stronger overarching framework, or built around what they call the Tackling Poverty Action Plan, reporting to a designated anti-tackling poverty minister. So there's a lot of change in terms of machinery of government, of trying to get a clearer grip on what the programmes are at, how they're going to deliver, and what they should deliver. Among other things, the Community's First programme got restructured. There was a tightening up of Flying Start and a rationalisation of a lot of the local partnership structures that had emerged. Alongside, there were three big new programmes. Families First in 2012 establish a more targeted approach to family experiences through a team around the family approach and better coordination across the various agencies. There was a pupil deprivation grant trying to address the poverty attainment gap in our schools. The LIFT program, which was designed to get people who long-term out of work, long-term workers into training or into employment. So this second phase moved from a kind of thousand flowers blooming to a much more strategic approach, more tightly supervised and clearer in its purpose. And if you look across the evaluations, again, you'll see there's clear evidence of a much clearer discussion about the change model that they were using, the logic of the actions they were taking, and a more extended and fuller approach to evaluation. This approach unexpectedly, at least I think to some of us involved unexpectedly, suddenly shifted or seemed to shift after the Assembly elections in 2016. The Welsh governments almost seemed to stop referring to an overarching anti-poverty strategy. And for example, the word poverty wasn't actually mentioned in the programme for government coming out of the election. Instead, the language shifted to a much wider goal of promoting inclusive prosperity, prosperity for all, and a focus on long-term outcomes and the Future Generations Act and the Future Generations Commissioner. The question is whether this shift was more about presentation than action. Most of the poverty-related programmes I referred to earlier on are continuing, supported by about 350 million of spending a year. The obvious main casualty has been the Communities First programme, but that was the one where there were probably always the greatest question marks about whether it was really delivering on a poverty agenda or not. There is a the most important new development is probably the new childcare offer, which has long been recognised as being one of the areas where Wales and the other devolved administrations can really make a positive contribution to supporting people into work. And we shall have to see how that progresses. Alongside that, there are questions about how you orientate the programmes around the city regions, the Valleys Task Force, and the proposed employability, sorting out employability programmes so that they provide a focused approach to how you deal with this issue of closing the gap between people's resources and their needs. So there's a lot to play for and a lot going on. And the big challenge is whether using this economic development lens will provide more in the way of impact on the otherwise recalcitrant levels of poverty in Wales. So just a couple of reflections before I pass over to the panel on that. One is that from the main thing that came out, one of the main things that came out of JRF's work on its UK poverty strategy was that, I mean, poverty is really complex. It's a difficult issue. The easy things are to do it by fiscal transfers, which was what the tax credit system was all about. But if you're trying to do some of the things that devolved administrations and the Welsh Government are having to do, they're very often having to engage in some of the more complex social and economic issues. And that's not easily done. So one of the lessons, I suppose, from the JRF work is that you only do it if you're very clear exactly what we mean by poverty and not get diverted into other very important social and other issues. If you want to do something about poverty, you have to be laser-like in just focusing on poverty and the causes I talked about. Second thing is probably means you have to deliver at scale, and that's no easy job in the historical atmosphere of austerity on public spending. So there may well be a question, and this is not just about Wales, this is about looking across at the anti-poverty programmes across most of the nations. There is an issue about whether you simply have to concentrate resources more, do two or three things and do them at scale, rather than try and deal with the myriad of important social issues that are clamouring rightly for spending. So there's something about the level and extent to which governments are going to be prepared to focus resources to deal with one specific aspect of what for them and politically is part of a wider social environment. Oriel, I hope that's enough to get people started.
Great. Thank you very much indeed.
Great. So that sets the scene for the basis for our discussion tonight. And I get the easy job and get to hand over to Jordan Davis, a BBC journalist who's going to chair the conversation with the panel now and also leave loads of time for conversations from all of you here in the audience this evening. We are recording tonight's event as well. We are recording it, I think. And so do please get involved. Jordan, over to you.
Thank you very much. Well, I'd like to welcome you all to what is clearly a very popular event and topical issue. I've been a BBC journalist for close to a decade, and like many professional Wales watchers, I've seen the extent and reality of poverty across Wales. We know the Welsh Government is about to phase out the Communities First programme. It's one of the flagship policies, not the only programme in this area, but clearly one of the big policies and one of the big programmes in this area. We'll be discussing this evening what it's achieved and what next without Communities First. I'll introduce the panel here. Our two critical friends who believe the Welsh Government hasn't given up on tackling poverty. Rhiannon Passmore is the Labour Assembly member for Isloyn, born and educated in the borough. Rhiannon's been recognised for her work in community regeneration, a former cabinet member for education at Caerphilly Council, chair and vice chair of two regional education bodies, and probably a most important qualification, a mother of four. Crian Davis is the chief executive of Disability Wales. Rhian recently travelled to Geneva to give evidence to the UN Committee on the Rights of Disabled People. Rhian chairs the Welsh Government's Framework for Action on Independent Living National Steering Group, and was the disability member on the Welsh Government's Tackling Poverty Advisory Group, so clearly has a wealth of experience in disability issues and poverty. And the panellists who believe maybe the Welsh Government could be doing a bit more in this area are Sian Gwenllian, the Plaid Cymru Assembly member for Arfon. In a previous life, she was a journalist for the BBC and HTV and worked for Gwynedd Council. Sian, you've been a school governor for 15 years and you're now chair of the school governors.
Not anymore.
Oh, you're not anymore? No. You've had enough of that, okay. Like me, she went to Aberystwyth and Cardiff University. You're a passionate campaigner on gender equality and the Welsh language. And Sian, you brought up your four children when your husband passed away. Chris Johns, the chief executive of the Building Communities Trust. Chris has years of experience in the not-for-profit sector. He was the director of Oxfam's UK poverty programme and head of Oxfam Cymru, where you engaged extensively with the Welsh Government on this. And Chris was the national coordinator for the community's first support network for 7 years across Wales, so vast experience in this area. We're going to begin by setting out our stall. So I'm going to ask you to tell me in 2 minutes each whether you think the Welsh Government has given up on tackling poverty. Chris, can I ask you first whether you think the Welsh Government has given up on tackling poverty?
As you've just been through, everyone's been just sitting for a general election. You're used to people not answering the questions directly. So I'm going to start by doing that. I think there are essentially three main strands in a way looking at tackling poverty. The first of all, Michael's alluded to, is whether people have enough money. The second issue is whether people can actually influence what's going on around them. And the third question is whether people have the capabilities, in a sense, to keep themselves out of poverty, whether they have the skills, whether their health is good enough, whether they have stable housing and so on. And I think it's fair to say that Welsh Government strategies, going back, all the way back to about 2000, have focused on that last one, mostly because that's where they had the power and where they felt they could make a difference. And it's honed in to very much a focus on employability, with a feeling that, in going back to the economy of the early 2000s, if we had some people were being left behind, everyone else was doing okay, and therefore if we could help a number of people get into work, they would be fine too. The problem was this was starting to unravel even before the Great Crash, and the Great Crash has unraveled it permanently. And we have got many, many more people in work in poverty now than out of work in poverty. The Welsh Government was very slow to actually pick up on this, as people who've lobbied them about this issue will testify. And I think what this now means is the Welsh Government needs to really rethink the tools it is using for tackling poverty. And in particular, they need to look at things, again, that Michael alluded to, the whole way in which anti-poverty strategies are linked into economic development and making sure that people can access the right kind of work. And the other thing that's going to have to change, simply because of the reality of austerity, is the kind of public services that were propping people up and providing support in communities are just going. This isn't the Welsh Government's fault. It's a fact of austerity. And there needs to be a new approach, and remains to be seen what resilient communities approach will do to actually help people provide mutual support at community level. And I think the jury is still out on that one.
Chris, thank you very much. Rhian, can you set up your stall? Has the Welsh Government given up on tackling poverty?
A qualified no for me. but I do think that the Welsh Government has reframed their approach, reflecting a new set of drivers around the deriving from the Future Generations Act, but also wider UK equality legislation. The EHRC's report, Is Wales Fairer?, shows that people with certain protected characteristics are more likely to be living in poverty and disproportionately affected by it. And I think the Welsh Government has recognised that it's unlikely to tackle poverty without a specific focus on reducing other inequalities. From our perspective at Disability Wales, this approach based on equality is long awaited. The Tackling Poverty Action Plan and Communities First focus very much on a place-based approach to poverty. However, as we've been hearing, the experiences of poverty are far more complex than just being about where you live, and include wider causes of inequality, particularly related to having one or often more protected characteristics. So a more strategic approach is required to tackling a range of barriers, whether it be education, housing, transport or employment, that includes policies and resources targeted at the ways people experience inequality, whether that's economically, socially, culturally or historically. Take disabled people. In Wales comprise 24% of the working age population. Half of all disabled people are workless. Half of all workless people are working. Sorry, half. All right, let's forget that. Half. It's such a serious point. It's a very serious point as well. So, disabled people comprise half of all workless working age adults. Thank you. I got there. Have fewer qualifications, and with 29% saying that a lack of transport is a key barrier to employment. So little progress will be made in tackling overall poverty in Wales without tackling the scale of inequality faced, for example, by disabled people. DW is working with Welsh Government in reviewing the Framework for Action on Independent Living, and the revised framework will strengthen links to implementation of the Convention on the Rights of Disabled People, the FGA, and Welsh Government's own strategies. We're aware of initiatives like the Additional Learning Needs Bill, the All-Age Apprenticeship Programme, the proposed Employability Strategy, and the Metro. And if these are implemented in accordance with principles of rights and equality, they have the potential to be transformative in delivering a more equal and inclusive society for all, resulting in fewer people living in poverty, because the surest way of tackling poverty is to deliver on equality.
Okay, Brian, thank you very much. Sian Gwenllian, has the Welsh Government given up on tackling poverty?
Well, the first thing I would say is that poverty exists across Wales, in rural as well as urban communities, and that we need to tackle it with a focus on the social and economic conditions, the fabric of the whole of Wales. And I think programmes that are sort of geographically focused on a number of small hundreds or less than that communities were never really going to work. I think we need to really, I agree with what the government is saying to some extent, you know, that we need to look at this problem through the economic lens, and that we need to have tackling poverty as part and parcel of the overall economic strategy, because of the situation with low wages, and families are in work and poor. So it's not all about creating jobs. It's about, you know, with what kind of jobs, in which sectors, what skills are needed. My problem is that there's a lack of urgency about moving forward with this. I mean, we still haven't seen the Welsh Labour Government's economic strategy. And we're over a year, it's how many, 13 months now, and we're still awaiting the economic strategy. So, and we need to see that, and we need to see where the employability stuff it fits into there, you know, where the improving the low wage economy, where all of that fits in. So until we actually see that big picture, it's very difficult to know whether or not we are actually going to move in the right direction. And I would also say, last point, that really until we tackle the major economic structural problems of our country, you know, we're going to be stuck. And I think we need the economic levers in Wales to be able to start tackling those and slowly change the nature of our economy and society. People say to me, oh, that's aspirational, that's too ambitious. Well, what's wrong with being aspirational? What's wrong with being ambitious? What's wrong with thinking that, you know, if we can do it ourselves, why don't we try doing it ourselves? Because it's not working as it is now. It has been, you know, in the pattern that it is now.
Sean Fan, thank you very much. Rhiannon, do you want to set out your stall? And you may want to possibly respond to some of that.
I would. Is it possible for me to go to the podium? Would people mind? Or do you want me to stay here the same as everybody else?
Thank you.
Well, thank you. First of all, I would say quite categorically the answer to the question is, have we stopped tackling poverty, and has the Welsh Government given up on tackling poverty? The answer is a succinct no. Clearly, the Labour government, the Welsh Labour government, has not given up in terms of our renewed focus and the renewed lens that is now focusing in a very different world to 2001 and in a very different world to 2012 and in a very different world to last year in terms of the external dynamic factors that are impacting upon Wales. Last week in the general election, Labour did exceed the expectations of the people of Wales, and I won't be political, but a huge vein running through that was a focus on those most vulnerable in society, those who feel left out from society, and those who feel that they're being taken for granted. And I mention this because the Welsh Labour manifesto has a golden thread running through that, and that is looking after all of those in our society so that we have a prosperous nation for all, for the many and not the few. Tackling poverty is in the DNA of the Welsh Labour government. Whether we get it right at every single corner is the issue, but we are in government and we have to have an optimum way forward. Carl Sargent's announcement that he was minded to phase out the Community First programme was an issue for many. It was a statement, though, on strategic need and on a restricted public purse in Wales, 1.2 billion cuts already through austerity, a renewed focus around Brexit, a 660 million black hole expected, a renewed focus in terms of how we deal with that shrinking public purse in regard to, can we work differently? Can we operate in a different regional setting with public service boards, with a different mandate around the Wellbeing and Future Generations Act? It's often said that Albert Einstein defined insanity as doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. Now, I would say that Community First has had huge impacts, many of them unmeasurable, soft impacts, whether or not somebody's had a mental breakdown, whether or not somebody has gone to prison, whether or not somebody has left their children, whether or not somebody's gone to Welsh Women's Aid. These are impacts that Community First, where it's worked brilliantly and well in many places across Wales, have been largely unmeasured. In a sense, its aspiration has been its undoing. And in a sense, its evaluation in terms of the renewed focus in 2012 has been 102 indicators because of the fact things have, in certain areas, not been optimum. I won't refer to some of those issues from the past that we've attempted in an imperfect way to get right. And that is politics, choices of how we go forward. And that's apparently apparent to me, that we have to be optimum in moving forward with that restricted public purse. So communities to have strong local infrastructure and strong inclusive leadership. Communities that have access to jobs and people with the right skills through an employability access. That, to me, is important, that we focus through that lens on what is needed for a prosperous nation, employability. The huge issue for us is in-work poverty, and we'll come to that in a minute. And I'm afraid I don't really have enough time to finish, but I'll just quickly mention infrastructure. I will mention empowerment around LIFT and Communities for Work and the PACE programmes. And I think it's important and very relevant the Welsh Government focuses in a new world, in a new landscape, in the areas that we know from research have proven the way forward. Thank you, Diolch.
Rhiannon, thank you very much for that. Let's start this discussion then by talking about the lessons learned from Communities First. Rhiannon laid out the vision there, but if we look at what the Bevan Foundation said to the inquiry into poverty in Wales, it said Communities First has not achieved significant measurable reductions in poverty and deprivation in designated areas or Wales as a whole. Sean Gwynplaine, do you agree with that?
To a certain extent, yes. I mean, I think, as I was saying, we need an all Wales approach. Poverty isn't confined to geographic areas. There are pockets of poverty everywhere. And, you know, confining it to geographic areas. And then after 2012, when it became clusters, and in my area, for example, in Arfon, we had three communities which were called a cluster, and they were quite different communities with quite different kind of needs coming through. But that geographical approach certainly didn't work, I don't think. And also the, I think the jam was, or the butter was spread too thinly. The Communities First programme was trying to do all kinds of stuff, you know, from getting people into work, yes, and I think that's quite a crucial part of it. But then there was the health aspects, and they're all very important. But I think it was too thinly spread. And going forward, we need to sort of really focus on which aspects of that programme actually did work. And I think, you know, the employability part of it maybe. That can be a focus, but that needs to be part of the economic strategy as well. You know, it just doesn't happen in a vacuum. And I think Communities First did exist in some kind of vacuum to a large extent and wasn't sort of part and parcel of the bigger picture.
And as Rhiannon said, there will be broader thinking, there will be Wales-wide thinking now. Chris, you were nodding your head then. Has it delivered achievable results?
Well, I think one of the problems with Communities First is that it had no idea what it was trying to do for quite a lot of the time. To the first 7 or 8 years, it wasn't an anti-poverty programme, it was a community development programme, and that's very different. It wasn't geared specifically on trying to address poverty. It was trying to encourage and support people to take action in their communities, which in some cases is really valuable, and I think some of the outcomes that Rhiannon talked about are very relevant. But you can't expect that scale of programme to make a measurable difference to poverty. It won't. And I think the other point that Sian Gwentlian made, which I fully agree with, it was a programme apart. For all the talk about programme bending and getting other parts of government, both local and central, to link into it, that really didn't work. It very much Communities First was doing a series of isolated activities, some of them very successful in their own terms and some of them not. And only after about 2011 was there a stronger focus on issues that address poverty. But even then, they weren't as linked into other aspects of government policy as they might have been, or that aspect significantly improved. But what it did do, which massively discredited the programme at local level, was it actually went from being a programme that everybody could take part in to being a programme that was only for the poorest. And actually, we work in 13 communities across Wales now, and we have a much more something I would describe as a community programme. And there's lots of people there who feel very alienated by that community element being taken away. So you suddenly had a very different kind of programme which was very, very targeted on certain people, which actually takes away some of the advantages you get of community action, where lots of people in a certain area come together and do things for each other. And that, I think there was a confusion there about what they were trying to achieve. But to describe yourself as having this flagship anti-poverty programme with a budget which was a minuscule percentage of the total Welsh Government budget was always going to be, in a sense, a hostage to fortune. And I think the Welsh Government should have being much clearer about how Communities First sat alongside the other things it was trying to do at the time.
For you, the ask was too much?
Absolutely, far too much.
Yeah. Rhian, you set out the link between poverty and disability issues. From where you're sitting, did Communities First address those issues and help people there?
I think I think there were disabled people that took part in Community First initiatives and activities, and I know valued them. I think the issue, though, is that complexity, so that not all disabled people who are poor are going to be living in poor areas, you know, because, for example, the way that people's, and particularly disabled people's housing needs are met, you know, people will actually be housed in, you know, could actually be in quite the leafy parts of the, you know, of the local authority, for example. So I think it's, you know, I think it by focusing on community, you know, geographic communities, it then didn't necessarily meet the needs of a wider range, whether that's disabled people, people from, you know, black and ethnic minority communities, or, you know, or older people, whatever, you know, because People are multidimensional. They engage with services in very different ways. Will have very different experiences. So I think a much more complex but nuanced approach needs to be, you know, one size does not fit all. And so I think, you know, approaches going forward need to recognise that.
So you want a more complex, nuanced approach.
Yeah.
Rhiannon, the plan for the Welsh Government is a Wales-wide approach. How do you address Rhiannon's point there?
I think in terms of the analysis of Community First to date, it has been aspirational. And I think in terms of moving that forward in a different public service and a different public purse agenda, we have to be more focused. And I think the key is flexibility. And I think you're absolutely right. Majoritively, place-based anti-poverty programmes are absolutely very relevant, because if you look at social housing and poor social housing, I live on the largest social housing estate in my constituency, and it is absolutely apparent that you will have a turnover of those with low income, whether they're in work or whether they're out of work. But that ability to be flexible was something that Community First has always struggled with from its very birth. And I think in terms of focusing the monies that we do have in a depleted environment, and I haven't mentioned welfare reform, and I haven't mentioned other issues that are going to impact in a tsunami of different hits around universal credit and obviously the disability issues around PIP and the claimants. These are huge issues that are going to affect this data in a very downward trend that are adjunct and external to what Welsh Government leverage is moving forward. So it's absolutely important that we have an absolute focus in terms of where we feel from research evidenced that we're going to have the biggest bang for the buck. And therefore, I think in terms if we go to the employability arm outside of empowerment and early years issues, we will look there at the fact that that employability programme will have an ability to be flexible. So it won't be place-based, and there is a danger there, because we do know that there are concentrations of poverty, but it then will address those issues in terms of those that have those protected characteristics. So it will have an ability to affect pockets of poverty, perhaps more on a lower super output level, but individually as well. And just if I may, one of the issues with Community First has been, is it there to bring an area out of poverty, which I think is very, very, very laudable, but highly aspirational? Or is it there for the outcome for that individual? Is it bespoke? So that whether or not that person moves out of that area of poor housing or not is something that has to then come back to the wider economic strategy, which I will say to Sian is currently being looked at because of the huge dynamic differences that have occurred over the last year. We are not in the same Wales or UK that we were a year and a half ago. If I said to anybody in this audience, would you believe that we would no longer be looking at being part of the European Union? Would we be looking at a society whereby those at the very bottom are using food banks and those in the middle, such as nurses and teachers? So we have shifted focus purely because we have to be dynamic, and what we do now has to work.
And that, the Minister said, is why Communities First is coming to an end. It's true to say, though, isn't it, that it's been difficult to quantify the outcomes from Communities First, and has the Welsh Government had to learn lessons from that?
I think if we look at the differences of approach of Community First since it's been born, to a sense, from its embryonic stage, you know, we've had different stages in terms of going from a lack of evaluation, a lack of monitoring, the flexibility for localism so that communities at the ground level can make those decisions, to 102 performance indicators, because there's a need for us to be audited. There's a need for us to be absolutely transparent in our communities. And I'm afraid this moving forward, we will take lessons from in terms of how that's moved. But I think it's absolutely essential that we concentrate on what is evidenced. And what is important is that we don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. And where there is good practice, and where Community First is working, cross-fertilising with other projects, that statutory bodies such as health or local authorities or public service boards with their leadership role and the Wellbeing and Future Generations Act, a responsibility and duty, absolutely have to pick up that mantle. So there is now a need more than ever for all those working within this field, and it's everybody within the public sector and the third sector, that we pull together in the same way.
Chris, what lessons do the Welsh Government need to learn?
Well, I think the first thing is it's actually clarity of purpose, what they're trying to do. I think the other thing is to taking Rhiannon's point a step further, is actually how do you make sure you get these links between what you might call the place-based approach and more thematic approaches? And that means two things, I think. One is to open up the channels of if you like, channels of communication between those two groups. Because one of the things you need to make sure is that people who are working on thematic approaches understand that there are pockets of work that they need to interact with. The other question, which I go back to, is one of the points I made in my opening comments, is about the whole question of influence and who can you influence. Now, in a sense, this is too big a picture for Michael's presentation. One of the biggest determinants of whether people are at risk of poverty is political. Do you have a government that's actually committed to addressing poverty? Now, at a macro level in Wales, I think we do. I think the policies stand up to themselves. At a micro level, I'm much more doubtful. I think the level, to be blunt, of stigmatisation that people living in poor communities face, not everywhere, is quite marked. And it does mean that people don't always treat people who might live in one area with the same respect in another if you're delivering a public service. And it means that we often have a problem getting the voices and views of people living in the poorest areas heard. The government has been trying to tackle this on and off for the last 10 years. And I think at a micro level, it's probably not got very far. At a macro level, the policies are still fairly sound.
Can I interrupt when you finish?
Yeah, sure. And I think if we're going to get an interaction between work going on at communities and work going on at thematic process, we need to do something about actually making those relationships stronger so that there is, if you like, a more defining clear rights of citizenship for people who are living in the poorest communities to actually have their views respected.
So basically, in terms of what you say, I don't fundamentally disagree with what you're saying in terms of social mobility, in terms of those who have access to the nearest school, in terms of those with parental choice that feel that they can travel 10 miles up the road and find a school that's more accessible. The issue is, have we got an education system and a reform system underway that will make schools accessible to everybody of the same quality? And I would argue that with curriculum reform and Donaldson and all of the many issues in terms of the best ever GCSE results for Wales that we are looking at the moment, and the foundation phase improvements, schooling and education and skills, the 100,000 all-age apprenticeships programmes, I feel that I would argue with you strongly that we have got those programmes in place and are putting them in place. But it's also about housing. It's also about affordability of housing. And I think it's absolutely imperative that the Labour government or any government across any country is putting in affordable housing for people so that we do have qualitative housing and qualitative schooling for all. And those skills are there. So it's not just a matter of one policy around poverty, such as Community First or whatever supplants it. It is a matter about getting that economic strategy. And here I will agree with you, Sean. We have to get that joined up and everybody does have to talk to everyone. And it's whether or not we feel those ducks are in the row. And I would argue that we are very much working in progress and there is work to do. But I do actually believe that we are moving in the right direction.
Sean Grenson?
Yes, I'm glad to hear that the economic strategy is happening, and I look forward to see how it all sort of blends in and what the interdepartmental focus will be as well. In the meantime, there are huge economic issues, yes. But then in the meantime, what has been done so far hasn't worked. Yes, we all agree on that. In terms of the percentages of people living in poverty.
But then you have to look at government influences.
What we had earlier on showed that. So what are we now going into? What is the next phase? What is the transitional period? I think there's a huge lack of clarity about where we're actually going. I think the way the whole issue of announcing that Communities First was coming to an end was badly managed. And I think, you know, that has affected the morale of staff. And I worry that we will lose the skills and the experience of staff that are working in the field now as they sort of obviously looking to other places to work. And in the meantime, there's this gap that we don't actually know exactly where we're going. What will be the connections between the employability strategy and the employability grant that's available? How do those connect together? Where does early years and Sure Start and all these other programs, how will they now glue together? Because Communities First was the kind of pivot that got people involved in all these other programs. Have we forgotten about the idea of children's zones, which was sort of flagged up at the beginning? We're talking about empowerment. What does empowerment look like? What is an empowered community?
You know, there are so many questions that still haven't been answered yet. And I think, you know, we're in danger here of sort of going round and round in circles. And at the end of the day, I'm not sure where we're actually going.
Sean, it's part of the future, building on those very unique, special relationships the community first workers have built with the communities they work in. Is that part of the answer in the future?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the buzzwords around is like around co-production, and I think it is actually about, you know, communities and individuals working co-productively with, you know, whether it's local authorities, health boards, or other agencies, you know, and you know, like pooling expertise, you know, collectively identifying what are the issues and then what are the solutions, and then together, you know, working to tackle them, because I think top-down approaches just don't work.
So a flatter structure.
Yes, but I think it's also got to be based on like mutual respect. You know, like we've all got something to contribute here. We've all got a role to play in identifying one, what the issue is, and most importantly, what the solution is, and then pooling the skills and knowledge and expertise to be able to work together to tackle it.
Can I pick up one point, Rhiannon? Yeah. First of all, I really hope you're right about the future direction of the curriculum. But I think the test is not going to be whether we get average GCSE results higher. The test is going to be what are the results for the people coming from the poorest communities if we want education to be contributing as it needs to. And unfortunately, whatever curriculum we face, we still have a situation where children will come into a high school, and if they come from the primary school that is regarded as from the sink estate, in far too many secondary schools, the expectations on them will be very low. And it's not just about curriculum change.
But that is
poor
leadership. And that is cultural change across
Absolutely.
Education.
So it's not just what you can do policy-wise, it's the cultural leadership
and
as well.
And I would argue very strongly that there has been a revolution in education in Wales that we are at the cusp of in terms of leadership. There is a new thinking in terms of how we move forward in terms of responsibility for each individual's child, and that will happen with the proof will happen with the, when that pudding is cooked. But there is a huge sea change in educational schools of thought moving forward. But what I would actually add in terms of children's zones, and if we look at what's happened in terms of Sure Start in England and in terms of our different approach in Wales in terms of children's centres, the children's zone along with ACE hubs are very much on the agenda in terms of how we look at adverse childhood.
What does it mean?
It means basically that we will have an intervention. It means that we will have... Just to finish your point, what does it look like and what does it mean? It will mean that we have areas of in what we hate to say deprived communities, areas that we know from the WIMD figures suffer from all of those lower indicators, where there will be a more enhanced provision of interventionist programs. We know for a start that a Fly and Start and Families First interventions work. So we need to make sure that when we look at the Sure Start model and what we've adapted in Wales, that we continue with that. And we know that in terms of foundation phase indices and indicators, that's worked in terms of that lower area and in terms of actually to say, yeah, we are narrowing the gap between those on free school meals and those who are not. That's happening now. How do we do that better, and how do we do it with less money is the point.
So in a word, Rhiannon, there has been poor leadership in educational achievement, and there's not now.
What I would say absolutely is that when we look at the education sector across Wales, there is a different feel in terms of how schools are managing and what they're focusing at and what their lens is at. And it is individual pupil progress. And I would argue very strongly that somebody's been very much involved in that in the last 5 to 6 years, that schools are at very different places to what they were 5 or 6 years ago.
And how much more is there to do?
It's a never-ending journey, and I would say that we're at the very beginning of that. What I would argue quite strongly, if we look at the PISA indices, we have to be looking at a Wales way of looking at things and a Welsh way of looking at things. And if our GCSE results are getting better, are we actually teaching our young people what we need around financial inclusion? Are we teaching our young people to have the skills that industry needs, the financial sector, higher level manufacturing in Wales, and exporting across the world is extremely important for us. So are we actually delivering on the curriculum level? And let's make that work and let's move it forward.
Can we talk about empowerment? It was one of the words Carl Sargent used when talking about the future. Yeah, 5 minutes time?
Yeah.
Can we talk about empowerment? One of the buzzwords from Carl Sargent. What, Chris, for you, does that mean?
I think it means people who's everybody having a right to have their views taken seriously, but also to feel that they can actually do things for themselves rather than having to rely on other people. And I have to say, out of the three strands that Carl Sargent's talked about, and I do hope he goes broader than that because those three are very narrow, that the other two are really tangible, and it's very clear where the Welsh Government is going on, and they've got, to be fair to them, quite clear achievements to build upon. Empowerment is much vaguer, and the work that's been done in the past has been substantially unsuccessful, to the point where actually in the first stage of Communities First, when communities tried to, in a sense, stand up to local authorities, Welsh Government officials were actually stopping them doing that because they didn't want to rock the boat politically. And I think this is where the disjunction between the kind of high-level political principles and the day-to-day, if you like, implementation of it have not historically met up. However, the ray of hope, if you like, is the Future Generations Act, which in a sense does give much more space to citizen voice. But whether it gives scope to citizen voice for people at the lower end of the social economic scale, I think is debatable. And we're going back years ago, Hugh Lewis said one of his ambitions for Communities First was that people in Merthyr would become as outspoken about their public services as people in Cowbridge. And I think he was absolutely right. That was the right thing to be looking for. But we're still a long way from that.
Empowerment for you, is that still too vague a term, or is it a good message for you?
It's something within DW as an organisation run and controlled by disabled people we take very dear to our hearts. So, it's at the individual level, it's somebody being able to make choices and have control over their own lives. It doesn't necessarily mean doing everything for yourself, but it's actually having the support to be able to do that. But I think there also has to be collective empowerment. We do a lot of work where disabled people work together, run their own organisations and run their own services. You know, we're involved with setting up co-ops, which are supporting people with their direct payments, or setting up social enterprises to run centres for independent living. So it's actually about individuals and communities, whether that's a geographic community or community around identity, kind of, you know, taking things over for themselves and actually, you know, being, achieving their goals, but this isn't a cheap option. People still have to have the resources to be able to deliver that. But it could actually achieve much greater results and a culture of dependency, which I think is in Wales. That's a bit of our default position. You know, the role of public services knowing best rather than individuals actually making decisions themselves.
Well, one last question then, and we'll go to the audience. This recent general election result was a vote to end austerity politics, wasn't it, Sian Gwilton?
I think there's more to it than that. I think we need to sort of analyse what's just happened and not just rush to conclusions. But it may give us a little bit more hope than we used to have, that things can actually start changing. It was good to see, you know, the vote going the way it did in England, and to think that, people felt engaged in politics may empower them in their communities as well. But, you know, maybe that's an aspirational thing.
Chris?
Yeah, I think what it's done is it's thrown the dominant model of austerity and ruthless market economics into doubt. And frankly, that has to be a good thing. It's done so much damage to people and communities in Wales and across other parts of the UK.
Of course, the Tories would argue it was the way they were going to rebalance the books, and it hasn't done that kind of damage.
Well, I think the evidence about the damage it's done has been referenced by people here today already. I think it's overwhelming, the damage it's done, and that there were alternatives. But I think the crucial thing is that the debates and the opportunities have now opened up a little bit. Mm-hmm. Even as Conservatives are still in government, they are already said they're going to look at doing things in slightly different ways. And obviously the prospect of one party being in government forever on that kind of approach now seems to have reduced dramatically.
Rena, thought on the general election result?
I think it was encouraging because I think probably up until, you know, certainly up until the last year or so, I think there's been a public consent to a lot of the austerity measures that have been undertaken. But I think what we saw in some of the campaigns and the debates was a recognition actually, you know, when we, you know, talking about, you know, older people, disabled people, you know, the decimation of public services, you know, the way in which, you know, public sector pay freezes, all that sort of thing. I think people are realising actually, you know, there's got to be something better than this. And I think now that the door is open there, I think to be, you know, rethinking, you know, austerity. I hope so.
I would also add that the Tories did win the general election. I would also add they haven't met the aim for austerity in terms of debt and deficit. I think that's a fundamental point.
Okay. Thank you very much. We'll throw questions open to the audience now. Yes, but yeah, if you could just introduce yourself and then your question and who you'd like to direct it to.
I think a lot of us actually want to make a point. And in my case, I'm Roger Tanner from Cardiff Civic Society, but in a previous life, I worked for 30 years in regeneration and community work and, in fact, Caerphilly County Council. And well, I wasn't a fan of Communities First from the start. I thought it was vague in its aims and lacked a strategic context. But I, over the years, I came to realise that there was a lot being achieved, not just in Abdi poverty, but in terms of health and education, training, transport. It was a kaleidoscope of uncoordinated initiatives, some of which were probably quite effective. But the point I'm making is, well, 2 points. One is that I came to realize over the decades that all these things were interconnected and you can't just laser-like focus on, say, training, and not realize it's linked to health issues, transport issues, housing issues, the environment itself. Mental health is a very big problem in a lot of these areas and getting people motivated. But Community First was so frustrating to me because we can never measure whether we're actually succeeding or not because the Welsh government's focus on the Welsh Index of Multiple Deprivation. Now, there's two fatal flaws with that measurement. One, it's a ranking system. So that's good to originally identify your most deprived areas. But it's the fatal flaw of there'll always be half of communities below average. You know, it's a ranking system. So the apparent a failure of Communities First was because the 100 most deprived communities were still more or less the 100 most deprived communities at the end of the programme. But they may have improved enormously, but we just don't know because of the ranking system, not in absolutes. You can dig down into the various factors that make up the index, but then I found out that the Welsh government statisticians have changed the way they measure health and the way they measure crime and the way they measure poverty between each survey. So you can't ever look at improvement from one survey to the next. And so the plea I'd make to the panel is, for goodness sake, whatever new measures you implement, make sure that they're monitored properly.
I agree.
And don't let the statisticians dictate what comes out of it. You tell them what you want and how you want it measured so that you can tell whether progress is being made or not. I'm sure a lot of things in Community First were successful, and alas, we don't know which ones they were.
Rhiannon Passmore, that is an important but obvious point, but wasn't happening.
I think we have to be absolutely honest. And when we say we're looking at this with a new lens in a new environment, I think one of the things that I've stated previously is that how can you evaluate something unless you have the effective data to evaluate it with? And what is very important, and it's something that I've stated in committee as well, is that we need a longitudinal study so that we can actually properly evaluate programmes that are starting from now. And I think that's all we can do. I've been in post for a year, and I'm arguing strongly that that is the case, and I'm sure others would agree that that is a sensible and appropriate way forward.
I can just say, I think the other thing you picked up on two really important points. I'd like to. One is the interaction of different things that happen in local communities. So I think there is a risk if you focus too narrowly on two or three things that you actually miss out the range of activities which will really make a difference to people's lives. The other thing to just, as Michael illustrated really, is you can make all the progress you want on helping people raise people's incomes, and the UK government comes along and slashes benefits, and what that will take away so much of the good work you've done over the previous 5 years, completely out of the control of the programme. The other thing, of course, is that if government's ever going to run a programme like that again, it needs to be more honest about the kinds of indicators that are realistic to address. Because if you have a really good employment support programme in Communities First area, you might get 20 people into a job. That doesn't look very much. It's actually made a huge amount of difference to a certain amount of people's lives. But actually there's a whole lot of other things going on as well, which aren't captured by traditional government measures, which is why Rhiannon's point about soft measures way back at the beginning is quite an important thing to do. But it's quite hard for governments to measure because the auditors don't like it.
Okay, gentleman in the corner there.
May I suggest that respect, Chair, that you ask a woman to make the next point before you hear from me? You don't want a succession of men.
Finally, Lydia then.
Hi, my name is Tasha. I work for an organisation called Quaratec. We're focused on gender equality. And something that's always been kind of concern with previous tackling poverty plans has been that it's kind of that one size fits all approach. So it's really good to see talk of a more tailored approach in things like the employability strategy that we're due to have out from Welsh Government. And my question really is around how do you marry the quite divergent approaches that you see from the Welsh Government and the UK Government around this topic? Because, yes, we can take a more tailored approach in a lot of these issues in Wales, but if the backdrop to that is a benefit system that still takes a very one-size-fits-all approach, does that have a significant impact on our ability in Wales to effectively deal with poverty as a problem?
I get that, absolutely, yes, and you know the differences between what's happening on a UK level in England and what's happening in Wales, it's getting more and more diverse, and maybe that's where part of the answer lies as well. And you know, this is probably not going to be a popular statement to be making now, but I think until we actually recognise that the way forward to get a more equal and just society in Wales is to actually start doing things for ourselves, start thinking about the kind of benefit system that we actually want, start thinking about the economic levers that we could actually start using to create that an equal society. You know, these structural economic problems are going to just carry on being there. Unless maybe we will have a huge shift in ideology, but I doubt it. And I think really we need to just get some of these tools ourselves and recognise that it's part of the answer in the long term. And I'm sure there's lots of people going like this.
Well, economically, does that add up? Economically, does that add up?
Well, it can, can't it? I mean, you know, if we want to create a society in Wales which is different to what we have now, if we want a kind of society which we all aspire to here, which is one based on equality, on fairness, why don't we start doing it ourselves? I mean, other countries, smaller countries than ourselves, who have started off from a poorer economic base, have managed to do it. It's all about aspiration. It's about political will. And at the end of the day, you know, if we really want to do this, you know, that's what gets me motivated about thinking about getting more powers. It's not just powers for power's sake. It's powers so that we can start addressing these ingrained inequalities that we have in our society.
Rhiannon, Sean, very briefly, do you want to address that?
Okay. I totally agree. It's a real challenge. I mean, for example, earlier this year, the DWP, obviously now under the last government, brought out a green paper on disability, health and employment. You know, and it was about a good thing. It was about tackling the huge employment gap between disabled and non-disabled people, which is 32% across the UK, 36% in Wales. However, the way it approached it was about, you know, getting people off benefits to bring down the benefit bill. But it was also about blaming the individual for being unemployed, not about looking at the barriers that, we've all been talking about, which actually lead to disabled people being unemployed in so many numbers. So, it's a huge challenge. I mean, I mean, I suppose some things you can do, like try and tinker around at the edges, is, you know, is working with DWP in Wales. You know, there's various stakeholder forums, you know, where you can be trying to, you know, address at least the way the programs and benefit system is delivered in Wales. But then also, you know, where Welsh Government has got levers, you know, around its employability strategy, you know, using those to the full and trying to coordinate between, you know, what, you know, have some kind of arrangement between what the UK delivers and then say what gets delivered in Wales, and not having that exclusion role where you can only be in one program. If you're in one, you can't be in another. So it's that sort of dialogue that is needed.
Very briefly to address some of the points.
This is a subject that I feel very strongly about. In terms of the debacle around the disability living allowance, and in terms of all of the issues around that, I think they've been horrific. And I think it's very telling that the UN wrote a report quite recently in terms of the negative state of disability in the UK. So in terms of your question, it's a very pertinent one in a time of when we're looking at more powers for Wales and in terms of what levers are at our disposal. And it is very frustrating when we know that one of the biggest impactors on those who are vulnerable and those who are in poverty are the actual welfare benefits. But we have to also say to ourselves, there are other issues as well in terms of stagnation of wages around the public sector. So I think if you look at the whole tsunami of issues that are affecting those who are struggling, we've got the most stagnated wages that we have had in the UK since, I think, from the IFS, the 1890s. And if you haven't had a pay rise since 2007, and VAT in terms of, we mentioned poverty premium earlier, in terms of how that disproportionately affects those on lower income. And you add that then to the fact that tax credit thresholds have been raised so high that in-work benefits are now a joke, on top of child benefit caps and the absolutely immoral rape clause that they put in there. I think there are so many different impactors now that are external adjunct to Wales that are impacting on poverty, that I think a new look, a new dynamic, a new landscape is here for us in terms of the type of Wales that we want to see moving forward.
I think some people may take issue with some of the ways
I'm sure
you've phrased that. Let's take the next question now. Let's go to the gentleman over there then.
Thank you, Chair. I'm Neil Anderson. I'm a consultant in transportation and economics and a former lecturer in sustainable transportation. I was impressed by Michael's 17 years on illustrated history we have on the slide in front of us, but I get the strong feeling that I'm hearing the movement of deck chairs in this today, and I'm not sure that we're going to be in a very different place in 10 years' time. I think that an economic strategy that could not deal with Brexit was not resilient enough to deal with Brexit. It's probably not going to be resilient enough to deal with the other shocks that are going to come across in front of us, automation, robotization, climate change, etc. So we need to think, be very critical, I think, of anything that comes out in terms of economic planning. And with due respect to the Welsh Government, I wish them luck. But I would like to ask the panel where they think we will be given the history of the last 17 years, in 10 years' time on poverty in Wales.
Rhian, do you want to pick that up?
Get my crystal ball out here. Well, at the moment, the trajectory is downwards, and you know, because you know, there is a huge gulf between, you know, kind of rich and poor, and I think all the issues around Brexit have actually highlighted that we live in a very divided society, and I think one issue we haven't perhaps raised is the issue around identity. I think people's identities are changing about how they see themselves and who they ally themselves with, so. I don't know, but on the other hand, on a positive side, I mean, what was really great is to see the way that young people were engaged, you know, in the election, you know, in a way that we haven't seen for many years. So I think that's something to be really positive about, and the fact that, you know, that passion, you know, seemed to be around social justice and equality. So, you know, I feel that we have to be optimistic, because otherwise, you know, it'd be difficult to get out of bed each morning. But I think that was a very encouraging sign. So I'm hoping that will help propel us all forward.
Chris, is the Welsh Government's economic strategy resilient enough to deal with those big things, Brexit, and deliver on poverty in a decade's time?
Well, as we haven't seen the strategy yet, obviously we can't really. It's difficult to comment. You have to suspect the answer is no, and partly because the scale of the challenges, partly because the tools in Wales are only part of the answer anyway. But frankly, although we have got this rhetoric which goes around, if you follow the think tanks, about inclusive growth, which is really the one we need to crack for this, we still haven't worked out what it is. How do you drive forward things like the City Deal and make sure that people who are towards the bottom of the income range are actually getting a reasonable share out of it? And that is a challenge. And what worries me is the City Deal is designed on a very traditional economic regeneration model, which hasn't really factored this in at all. And to a certain extent, the local authorities in Wales had to sign up to George Osborne's model to get the money. Although they may tinker around the edges, they haven't got that much flexibility. I think a lot of the key factors are going to be how far will we get on actually helping people develop flexible skill bases, which allow them, if you like, to migrate around different bits of the labour market, and how much will we actually succeed in developing an economy which takes advantage of new technologies. I do think one of the brighter points which we see, we even see in some of the communities we work in, is actually younger people getting involved in new companies which are getting involved in digital economy and so on. And I think that is one of the few bright points if you see, but I think the battle ahead is hard. Even if we can now be slightly optimistic about escaping the worst of Brexit, if the last few days are anything to go upon, the challenges that you talked about are coming, whatever our trading relationships with the rest of the world.
Renan Passmore, it's an important question. Do you want to answer
very
the gentleman's
point? Into it, and it's a huge question, and it's very difficult to answer it quickly. I would say quite categorically, I would point you towards the Labour manifesto in terms of a bright new vision for a new world, but I know you won't be satisfied with that. What I would also say is let's look at social procurement. Let's look at the huge infrastructural programmes and initiatives like, for instance, Tidal Lagoon, the Metro. What can we actually source in Wales? It's absolutely crazy to take a primary steel making capacity out of Wales. I do not agree that George Osborne was right to have huge steel contracts with China when we have an industry ready here of a qualitative nature to be able to take those projects forward. So let's be clever and let's make sure that we do have those powers so that we are able to socially procure. And I would say to Sian to watch the space on the economic strategy, because unless we do socially procure and unless we are building a flexible workforce, and I come back to the working with industry in terms of the skills on the curriculum that we need to be able to be a dynamic force in a bigger world, then I don't think we will get that far. And I'm confident that the new economic strategy, working with a higher export strategic growth across Wales, and we look at the high level of business growth in Wales, we are at the cusp of a difference, I hope.
Sian, you would say we haven't seen the economic strategy yet, but it's an important point that the gentleman raises. Do you want to answer his question as well?
A huge, huge question, of course. But, you know, yes, we have to think that we can change. We have to think that we can actually create a fairer society. And it's around income, it's around housing, it's around education, it's around health. You know, those are the major areas that we need to be closing gaps there everywhere. I think with the correct political will, with the sense of urgency that's needed, you know, that we, a lot of what's needed to be done, we know what it is. We just need that will and that ability to just get delivering on a lot of these things. I think, you know, things like the Future Generations Act, brilliant, yes, all up there. But how does that actually grill down? And I think, you know, that Welsh Government have a responsibility not only in creating these strategies, but in making sure that they actually deliver on those and that we see the outcomes. We see the outcomes and that government sort of keep the local to account on those. But I think infrastructure, skills, if we focus on those in the economic strategy, you know, and then within that, if we start thinking about the in-work poverty, because the employability is all is fine, but what you're doing there is getting people, they're not unemployed, but they're still in lower wage jobs, especially in my area. The challenge is to create those jobs that pay better. It's not rocket science, really, is it? But, and it's just having that political will and the strength to just, right, we do the best we can, to answer your question.
Okay, yeah. Thank you. yes, lady here.
I'd be interested to know what everybody else thinks.
Hello, Eva Elliott from Cardiff University. I agree with a lot of the kind of ambitions and going forward that I've heard on the platform, but I would ask a slightly different question, which is about the phasing out of communities first and perhaps some of the effects that that might have on your ambitions going forward, because it's never about just saying, oh, well, it's not working, we'll stop that, so we can do all these other fantastic things. The announcement, as we know, of the phasing out of communities first, most of the workers heard about it first on a television announcement. And that was not only cruel on the people who were working in communities first areas and the communities that they were serving, it had effects on that workforce and the capacity to take anything forward in itself. So people started to look for other jobs. Plans for going forward began to crumble. Just 2 weeks ago, the entire workforce, Communities First workforce in Merthyr, in the North Merthyr Tydfil cluster, were made unemployed. They were served their redundancy notices. At the same time, there is a transition program where, at the local level, they are supposed to be looking at what works, what might be preserved in order to take things forward. Now, I can think of just two examples of projects that have taken years to build up that have worked. I'm sure that anybody looking at them would say. One is a youth project that took 17 years to build up, because communities need an infrastructure for empowerment as well. It took years to build up, so that no longer exists. It's gone in a flash. Another project, a men's project, where we know that actually it's quite difficult to get men involved in community-based projects, worked fantastically well. I'm sure you're going to hear an announcement soon about how fantastic it was, but can't say anything at the moment. Yeah, the community development worker has been served his redundancy notice. So in the context of building kind of legacy plans for going forward, what does the empowerment program mean?
Rhiannon Passmore, there appears to be a degree of anger on how this announcement was made. And are those important links that the Communities First workers and have built in the communities, are they going to be squandered?
And I think it's a very important point that you make in terms of those qualitative projects and programmes and initiatives that we know are out there and how those are now taking forward in the next generation of projects. Now, as you mentioned, there will be the legacy fund, and there's a transition fund moving forward. There'll be a 6 million revenue and a 4 million capital bid programme to be placed forward to elongate that transition programme. But you're absolutely right. It's a coming to an end of those programmes in the way that they are currently being funded. And what I would say is that it's absolutely imperative that local authorities and those clusters and those lead delivery bodies are doing absolutely everything they can, and I'm sure that they are, in terms of carrying on the legacy of those best practice projects in the future, and can they be funded in a different way. But I'd also say, to finish off what my contribution is on this, is that we have a public purse that is shrinking. We've lost 1.2 billion so far. So we have to look at that holistic assessment across the piece and see how we can work better with the fabric that we have got.
But we don't have the capacity now or the structures that will maintain that, even what's worked, because those people are going now, planning within those organisations, those partnerships, they're working in different ways now, so there's not the capacity to do that, to keep that skilled worker.
And all I would say to you is that we want to carry those programmes forward that are qualitative, and we need to do that. So in terms of your public service boards and in terms of their mandates around their assessments of well-being in your local community, that is something absolutely at the local level, at the local leadership level, that needs to be thought of and taken forward on that local agenda.
Chris, is there a danger that lots of that good work is going to be wasted?
We have a lot of experience. The work I do now works in communities first areas, so we see this happening. I would say there, unless a local project, and there is at least one example in this room, goes out and gets other funding for the work, there is almost no chance of the connections being maintained because that infrastructure will go. I mean, I think that's a fact, like an evidence. I can see the nodding heads at the back as well. There are a few cases where people are getting alternative funding. We're providing funding in one case. What I would say, though, I'm afraid, Eva, is the other side of the coin, is we've seen Communities First disappear in most of the areas we're working in, because it will be going. The reaction has been very mixed from local community members about how valuable it is, and probably about 50-50 between a feeling of this is a serious loss and this is actually not a big loss. So I think the other question, which I suspect was partly behind the minister's decision, is that very mixed effectiveness of the programme across the piece. But if we do, I have to be honest, I don't think there is any sort of structured mechanism for keeping benefits of the programme. And where it will be done, it'll be local initiative. I don't see any sign of public service boards at this stage in their relatively young lives, if you like, having the capacity to take on that level of local work.
But they are tasked with that responsibility.
They may be.
And I would also say in terms of...
But I don't think it's happening.
That is the responsibility. And I would say in terms of that transition funding moving forward, that is the purpose of it.
And I think it's really bad planning. You know, I think it was totally unacceptable the way the announcement was made. And it's not acceptable now that we're still not absolutely clear what's happening next. And we're losing these really valuable people who've been working in the communities, who understand the problems. And really, to me, one of the great things about Communities First has been those people working one-to-one with families in their houses, you know, not in the community, just that one-to-one work that's been happening. And the trust that's been built up over the years of that, you know, somewhere there's something wrong when you go from that kind of situation where you've got that expertise of workforce to the potentially where we are now, where we're losing people quickly because the direction of travel isn't clear for people, and it needs that clarity, and it's bad planning.
Can I ask you what you make of the answers here?
Well, I'm disappointed. I can see what you're saying in terms of the responsibilities of the public service boards taking that up. The problem is they can't do that job when the ground is shifting and all the pieces in place are just flying everywhere. It's impossible to plan properly in that, and it's impossible to plan properly if you don't know what you're transitioning to.
Okay, we're looking at the last question. Gentleman at the back there, at the right at the back. Yep.
Thank you, Chair. My name's Steve Clark. I'm a specialist in community development, and I had the pleasure and privilege of working for 12 years in the docks area of Newport before I became an academic and a researcher. There have been some very interesting things come up today. One of them was that anything that goes from the top down cannot be successful. And that's a very important point because it brings out a paradox, that unless the process of change which community development and social and economic development requires is driven from the top with a purpose, then the bottom cannot hold it together on their own impetus. They don't have the experience at holding themselves together on a task. Small business development is a very good example of this, where things flourish, flare up and die away, and only a very few of them survive. The Welsh Government, I believe, needs to take an ideological position on this. It needs to drive with top-down trained personnel an initiative that is going to guide and motivate the local regeneration process so that poverty can be tackled at a local basis. I also feel that we have a philosophy of dependency upon government handouts, which we know how frivolous and pernicious that can be because they're here today and gone tomorrow. That communities who are interested and involved in their own regeneration need to do it on their own resources, which sounds a strange thing to say when everybody is suffering impoverishment. But a very good example of this goes all the way back to the American government in the First World War, when they needed to motivate the rural communities that hardly knew there was a war going to supply America with the agricultural resources needed to wage the war. What they did was they shot into all these rural communities one trained person, a person trained in generating local communities. And the whole program worked, and America was able to sustain itself and to provide itself with an agricultural powerhouse capable of sustaining a war effort.
Can you answer the gentleman's point on top-down leadership? Where do you stand on that? Sean, question first.
Well, the leadership has to come from the Welsh Government. There's no doubt in my mind at all that, you know, any kind of political change has to come from the top. But then, of course, you have to engage everybody else in the process. And my worry with the Communities First, especially, is that that hasn't happened. In fact, you know, because of the way it's been handled, that a lot of that trust that's needed to get initiatives off the ground has been lost. And you know, that there's a lot of bridges that need to be built again if we're going to have something, another program carrying on from here.
Chris?
I think it's a really interesting one. I don't agree with Sian in the sense that all leadership has to come from the Welsh Government. I think leadership comes from everywhere. I think leadership comes from the Welsh Government in certain things. It comes from other public bodies. It comes from businesses. It comes from communities, depending on what you're doing. And there's a real risk in depending too much on leadership from one source that other people are just ticking the box when they follow it. And the best leadership is leadership that people believe in and helps people get results. And to go back to the particular example that Steve Clark gave, there's been a program on a small scale called Canevin, which came to an end last year, I think, which has done this on a kind of micro scale on environmental grounds. And it did show some interesting signs. Unfortunately, it then ran out of money. But I do think if you're going to inject resources in from the top, they have to be a support to what's going on locally rather than directing what's going on locally. Otherwise, you won't get any sort of buy-in to it. And I think one of the risks of all of this kind of work being directed from central government is that it loses touch with reality of what's going on the ground quite quickly. So you need to be clear about what you can direct from the top and where you need to give people the flexibility to deliver what makes sense to them at a local level.
Rhiannon, we'll come to you now. Rhiannon, you were advocating a flatter structure earlier on.
Yeah, well, I mean, when I look at the, you know, having been involved in the disabled people's movement for, you know, many more years than I care to remember, the actual leadership in achieving, you know, tackling disability discrimination, you know, looking at things like direct payments, people being able to employ their own personal assistants, people, you know, setting up their own services, like through Centres for Independent Living, that completely came from disabled people. Mm. If we'd sat around waiting for government, whatever government it was, to do something, we'd still be waiting. So I think, you know, I think things need to come from the grassroots. That passion, you know, that lived experience, that expertise. But what you need is the kind of leadership in government that listens and actually recognises that they don't have all the answers, and that the people that they're there to represent do have the answers, and you know, and then you know, then both working together, harnessing the resources to actually deliver. I think that has to be how it works. You know, just handing something down, we know it doesn't work. It just patronises people, disenfranchises people, and at the end of the day is counterproductive.
Rhiannon, perhaps my final point, you need to provide strong
leadership.
And I would argue very strongly that that is absolutely imperative in terms of the will to do it, and I would argue that Welsh Government has the will to do that. In terms of the strategy around poverty, we talked about an economic strategy that's emergent at the moment. But I would also say it's a shared responsibility once that strategy has been outlined in terms of local authorities, in terms of health bodies, in terms of public service boards, in terms of a new way of working moving forward. It is a shared responsibility. And this is why the Wellbeing of Future Generations Act is so exciting. If we can get a proper planned assessment of need within local communities, and then that leads the delivery of those local services, it will not be top down, but there will be a golden thread leading to the top in terms of these are the expectations within our communities. And I would also say, in terms of some of the excellent projects that are very, very broad in terms of their mandate across Wales at the moment, many of them are fantastic projects. We need, for instance, if it's a smoking cessation project that's currently being funded or much funded by Community First, health boards to take those responsibilities on board so that we're actually putting the correct labels to what we're actually funding, so that we've got a focused approach moving forward rather than a very broad portfolio that we can no longer sustain in this climate.
Okay, thank you. That draws to a close the debate and discussion element of this evening. I think to summarise some of the points, I think we've established the aims of Communities First were ambitious, possibly difficult to measure from the outset. We discussed the scale of the task. It may have been too big, although undoubtedly it had an effect on transforming very many people's lives and has built important links in the community. And there's recognition that maybe those links shouldn't be lost and those expertise shouldn't be lost. The future now is a Wales-wide strategy and Wales-wide thinking, although you'd like to see more in terms of the economic strategy behind all of that. And empowerment appears to be a key phrase and buzzword here. But I think there's a feeling that needs to be fleshed out a bit more. So those are the points as I see it. And let's thank the panellists as well. I'd like to introduce now Professor Kevin Morgan, Dean of Engagement at Cardiff University.
Many thanks. I've been given all of 2 minutes to sum up this evening, and I'd like to begin by my most pleasant task, which is, first of all, to thank Oriel and the magnificent Institute of Welsh Affairs team for organising this event. We in Cardiff University sponsored the event in partnership with the Institute. So many, many thanks to you, Oriel, and Laura and the team. Thanks also to our speakers. We've had a very robust discussion this evening. Thanks to Eversheds for hosting us, and thanks of course to all of you for participating. I'd just like to say that Cardiff University, as a sponsor of the event, is very ambitious for Wales. We are committed to a dynamic economy and a flourishing society. And I think the common denominator of a dynamic economy and a flourishing society is a culture which can generate innovative ideas and can exchange and scrutinize them in a way where constructive challenge isn't misconstrued as disloyalty. It's a big cultural problem we have in Wales, dealing with constructive challenge without being accused of talking Wales down the river or selling Wales out. It's a real problem that we have that we need to address in our culture, in our political culture. A number of things emerged this evening for me. I mean, there's so many good ideas to take away, and I hope we'll capture them. Chris's point, for example, about the need for clarity of purpose. It would be comical if it weren't tragic that many people judged Community First for the first 10 years as an anti-poverty strategy when it was nothing of the sort. It was a community development strategy, as he made clear. A clarity of purpose was totally absent right from the earliest days of the launch of Communities First. And that's just a tragedy which we must learn from in an honest way. We can say that Rhiannon, I think, mentioned the need for evidence. And I think it's absolutely essential when we think of the next stage now that we have a merciless attention to what works where and why. That needs a robust evidence base. And in the context of Brexit, of course, I hope it's going to be an international evidence base. But where does that come from? It can't come from within Welsh Government, quite frankly, because the resources are not there. I hope the will would be there, the appetite, but the resources are not there. And that's why Welsh Government needs to work hand in glove with the universities and with civil society organisations to furnish an evidence base which is second to none when we think about where we're going in the future. And that's where the university sector, I think, needs to step up to its plate. We are launching our new civic mission shortly in Cardiff University for our public engagement strategy. And this event that we've done this evening with Auriel and her team is one of a number of events where we try to convene first-class public debates about quality of life in Wales, because the theme of our engagement strategy is to promote the health, wealth and well-being of Wales over the next 20 years. I hope you'll engage with us, but can we have a hand of applause, please, for the speakers and the hosts? Thank you very much.